One thing in the news that we're coming across a great deal, and certainly the actual tape that we'll be listening from Mr. Armstrong today, is about the times and seasons that we're living in. And certainly as we look at the days of unleavened bread, the purpose that God has given us a certain knowledge and understanding of what in fact is coming on this world is so that we can in fact make the changes necessary and able to in fact be part of a different government, a different system. But here, one thing that is continually in the news at the moment is Iran. Now, Iran is almost, it's almost like a domino effect. You know, when you looked at Afghanistan, when America went in there after 9/11, and then Iraq, and now Iran is on the target, it seems. But Iran is a good deal different from Iraq, certainly. It's a much bigger country, much, much more populous. And if we notice, if we just turn over to Isaiah chapter 30, Isaiah chapter 30 is one scripture that we read fairly often in this context. But we do know that something is going to happen that will cause what we foresee, or what God has prophesied just before the King, you know, Christ's return, the tribulation and the moving into the day of the Lord. These things are going to happen suddenly. It says here in Isaiah 30, notice in verse 8, it says, "Now go and write it before them in a table, note it in a book, that it may be for the time to come forever and ever." And I think the actual word, the time to come, is the latter day. It's, you're looking at the latter days. "But this is a rebellious people and lying children, children that will not hear the law of the Eternal, which say to the seers, don't see, to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Get out of the way, turn aside out of the path, cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us." In other words, they don't want to listen to what God has got to say. And certainly you see within the country today a steady moving away from the laws of God and from the ways of God as we look at the country that we're in. "Therefore, thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and stay thereon, therefore this iniquity shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out as a high wall whose breaking comes suddenly in an instant." It is something which will happen very, very suddenly, and there's going to be some form of trigger that will take place. Now, in the case of Iran, I want you to notice something over in Ezekiel 38. Ezekiel 38. And I just wonder whether you've actually seen this before. Now, Ezekiel 37 is about the Valley of Dry Bones. And Ezekiel then, from the perspective of the Valley of Dry Bones, is looking backwards in time, coming to Ezekiel 38, which you're looking at Gog and Magog that comes up at the end of the millennium, and they come up against Christ. When Satan's released for a little season, they're destroyed. But he also notices the next thing, like a hill behind Gog and Magog at the beginning of the millennium. Now, I haven't got time to go into that right now, but I want you to notice, because the only place that talks about who is with Gog and Magog is in Ezekiel 38. And in Ezekiel 38, where it talks about the word of the Eternal came to me, saying, "Son of man, set your face against Gog and the land of Magog," and so on. But I want you to notice verse 5. "Persia, Ethiopia, and Phut," which is probably India, "are with them." So when we're looking at Iran, this which is Persia, remember the Shah of Persia, it almost appears, you know, that is the only incident where it shows the coalition of nations that almost appears to be both at the end of the millennium and also at the beginning of the millennium as well. And because there are two occasions where Gog and Magog come up. But it does appear that Persia is with them. Now, that would tie in largely with the King of the North and the King of the South, where we're looking at there is going to be some kind of contention. In the paper today, if I can find the article today, it says, this is coming from, I'll try and get his name right, Aminadadjab. Anyway, he's the leader of Persia, of Iran. He says that Israel will be annihilated in one storm, says the Iranian leader. He says, the president of Iran appeared to be threatening Israel with a nuclear attack yesterday when he described it as a rotten, dried tree that would be annihilated by one storm. Now, how far down this nuclear road they've gone is another matter. The fact that when you're looking at Israel also, they have nuclear weapons, and also the entire might of the United States is behind them as well. He says, in his most vitriolic and anti-Semitic attack to date, he warned that Israel faced imminent destruction. While he didn't refer explicitly to nuclear weapons, his reference to the one storm that would do away with Israel was seen as a code for nuclear Armageddon. So we are looking at that, and we're looking at this this position of Iran and the position of this particular leader. Back in January, about mid-January, there was an article in the Telegraph which talks about divine mission is driving Iran's new leader. And it says here, it says, as Iran rushes towards confrontation with the world over its nuclear program, the question uppermost in the mind of the Western leaders is, what is moving its president to such recklessness? And it says, there's another dimension. It talks about political analysis and so on. And then it says, there's another dimension, which is a religious messianism that some suspect is giving the Iranian leader a dangerous sense of divine mission. And it goes on to describe, and I think I've read this in a news analysis before, but it describes that all streams of Islam believe in a divine savior known as the Mahdi, who will appear at the end of days. A common rumor denied by the government but widely believed is that the president and his cabinet have signed a contract pledging themselves to work for the return of the Mahdi and sent it to Jamkaran, which is... I think it's to do with the actual place where this Mahdi is venerated. Iran's dominant Twelvers sects believe that this will be Muhammad ibn Hassan, regarded as the 12th Iman or righteous descendant of the Prophet Muhammad. He's said to have gone into occlusion in the 9th century at the age of 5, and his return will be preceded by cosmic chaos, wars and bloodshed, and after a cataclysmic confrontation with evil and darkness, the Mahdi will leave the world to an era of universal peace. Now that is the context of what we are seeing currently as far as Iran is concerned. Now what we are seeing is that on the 3rd of April, that was... I think a week ago last Monday, it says Iran sends a message to the West by boasting about its high-speed torpedo. And now, so it's not just nuclear weapons that we're talking about. There's also other military build-up as well by this particular country. Iran announced yesterday that it had carried out successful fire testings of the world's fastest torpedo capable of outrunning any warship. The message was intended as a signal to the Western military planners considering attacks to deal with Iran's nascent nuclear capability. While military plans remain secret, it is believed that Washington, London and Tel Aviv have begun drawing up options ranging from surgical airstrikes to helicopter-borne commando raids. It says a new torpedo of the speed and capability described by this Rear Admiral of the Revolutionary Guards would not be used to combat Western warships involved in an attack on Iran, but to punish Western military action by crippling the world's oil supply. You see, where Iran lies, right on that, going into the Persian Gulf, and all of Saudi Arabia's, not all of Saudi Arabia's, much of Saudi Arabia's oil comes in that way. You're getting oil out of Iraq from the top. You're getting all the other oil-rich states as well in that area. And it is. And right at the mouth of the Persian Gulf is Iran. You sink some tankers in those areas. And this high-tech torpedo, what's it actually describe? I mean, it can move, let's see, it says, underwater, the maximum speed that a missile can move was 25 meters a second, but now we possess one that goes as fast as 100 meters a second. That's 100 meters a second. So it's obviously some kind of jet-propelled torpedo underwater, and there's nothing in conventional that we've seen so far that can stop something like this. at that kind of speed. That is the theory. In which case, they've got torpedo boats, and it then goes into this next. Let's see, what day is this? This is April the 5th. That was April, I think, the 3rd. Iran raises tensions with a show of strength. It says, a stealth flying boat, a radar evading missile with multiple warheads, a rocket torpedo, and an anti-ship missile that cannot be jammed. With every day passes, that Iran announces a development of its military hardware. So it is gearing itself up. It says, there is no doubt that it is a certain amount of bravado in what is coming out of Tehran, an Israeli official said, but there is enough substance in some of the stuff that they've been talking about for us to be concerned. And it's not a case of what is going to be attacking Israel, although that is the direction in which they are aiming. It is what they will do within the Persian Gulf. And that is what is important. And certainly when you put it together with that scripture where it appears that Persia may be allied with the Meshech and Tubal at the end time, or at least there'll be some kind of an arrangement there, against the King of the North, you put it together with what they're trying to accomplish. And also you put it together with the fact that the King of the North has got to come down into the area around Jerusalem and surround Jerusalem with armies. Something is going to trigger that. Something is going to cause that. Now, it talks here in, this is April the 7th, this is Friday. Iran has missiles to carry nuclear warheads. An updated Scud puts Israel in Tehran's sight. So if they do get nuclear warheads, then they have the missile technology to be able to deliver them, according to this particular article here. It says here, another one, this is in Tuesday, April 11th, Bush backs diplomacy to curb nuclear Iran as Washington talks of war. President George Bush insisted yesterday that he could not allow Iran to have nuclear arms, as reports that the Pentagon has updated plans for airstrikes triggered alarm on both sides of the Atlantic. But you can see why they are considering airstrikes, because this really is a power in a strategic place which is moving in a certain direction. And do they stop it now, or do they wait until it's unstoppable? And obviously the answer would be to try and stop it now. This is from the Wednesday the 12th of April. Iran has joined the nuclear club. Iran declared yesterday that it has mastered the means of enriching uranium, boasting that our enemies cannot do a thing to stop its nuclear ambitions. So this was last Wednesday. And in the same paper was an analysis. Has Iran reached the nuclear point of no return? The backdrop was a mural depicting white doves of peace flocking around the symbols of an atom, but this name, Amir Dayajab, last night may have taken Iran a step closer to international sanctions or even military action by America or Israel. And it goes on there. And then when we come to Thursday, this last Thursday, the 13th, our nuclear drive is unstoppable, says a defiant Iran. And it goes, there's an article there. You can see the whole thing gearing up. But something is going to cause this trigger to take place. Something is going to cause a trigger within the world which will cause America obviously, something is going to cause America to come down. And one thing that we do need to be aware of is the oil, and we need to be aware of the dollar. If the dollar comes, you know, if you've got famine in America, if you've got a drought in America, which there certainly has been and is in certain areas of America, if you've also got the dollar under pressure from an oil, an attack such as this in the Persian Gulf, this is the kind of thing that would cause the trigger to occur. And as I've said before, we don't necessarily have to see Europe come in from the outside and attack. They can come in from the inside and attack. And certainly looking at the church and what happened within the church, this is what happened within the church, and we were not expecting it. We do not need to dismiss that as a possibility. Over in Daniel chapter 11, just be aware of what it says here. At the end of chapter 11, you've got a historic section that comes up to verse 31. You then have a dual section that starts in verse 32 and goes all the way down to around about verse 40. And then you go into the future prophecies from about verse 41 on. And in chapter 12, verse 1, it then talks about the tribulation. So these things are all flowing into the tribulation. We have seen a type of verse 40 that already has taken place in the Second World War when Mussolini went down into Ethiopia. But there is something that happens that causes verse 41, he shall enter into the glorious land, many countries shall be overthrown, these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. So this is the king of the north now coming down. Something has caused that. According to what it says in verse 40, it says, and at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and horsemen and many ships. Now, as I say, Mr. Armstrong saw that as Ethiopia in the south and Mussolini going against Ethiopia. But that could be just a type. And this something will trigger, you know, whether in fact it is the king of the south pushing at him in the future or not. Something is going to trigger the king of the north coming into that area, and it is going to flow straight down into verse 1 of chapter 12, which is the tribulation. So we do need to be aware that Persia, Iran, is certainly a critical area in this this situation. And at the same time, when we're looking at what's going on within Europe, there's it is interesting that in Europe, this is from Wednesday, last Wednesday, Islamic terrorism, in quotes, is too emotive a phrase, says the EU. It says European governments should shun the phrase Islamic terrorists in favour of terrorists who abusively invoke Islam. You talk about political correct nonsense. But you know, they are leaning in that direction at the moment. But eventually there is going to be there is going to be something that actually triggers them to come down into the area around Jerusalem. The interesting thing is that in the paper on last Monday, it says Catholic masses for the Blairs in number 10, Tony Blair and his family have been celebrating masses conducted by a Roman Catholic priest at Downing Street. It emerged yesterday. In addition, we found here, this is the 17th, it says the BBC chief is the most powerful Catholic layman in Britain. So the BBC, you know, the bias that we will find within the BBC will be towards the Catholic Church. In another article here, this is from, what I haven't got the date on this one, but it's talking about the French riots that were there. It's saying that in a changing world, France's young are looking backwards. It says the riots in France are a case in point. They may look like student uprising anywhere on earth, willowy young students on one side and silver-haired politicians on the other, but take a look at the placards and listen to the shouted slogans, and this is a reactionary revolution demanding not change, but its opposite. The students want to turn back the clock to France of their parents and grandparents, to some golden age when jobs were for life and the state took care of the all ills. This is militant, car-burning nostalgia. And it only is a small step to go one more step back to the Holy Roman Empire if they have the right political leadership. And that political leadership in today's paper, there's a headline on the news in page 12, the decadent world, and it's talking about the Western world, is in the grip of Satan, says the Pope. Pope Benedict said last night that the world was in the grip of Satan and prayed for mankind to open its eyes to the filth around us. At an Easter ceremony that recreated the passage of Jesus Christ to the crucifixion, Benedict lashed out at man's decadent narcissism. He says a slick campaign of propaganda is spreading an inane apologia of evil, a senseless cult of Satan. Now that's a direct attack on Western values. And there is going to be, according to prophecy, this link between the Catholic Church and the Europe. And it will be a short-lived alliance, because eventually it talks about Europe burning her with fire. So there's going to be an attack by Europe, eventually, on the Catholic Church. So it is the arrangement between a whore and her paramours. And it's a case of that whore being, you know, it makes sense for the two parties to get together. But eventually it'll blow up. It won't work. But we do need to see that the various pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, in which case Iran is a crucial piece, Europe is a crucial piece, the Pope is a crucial piece, and these things are there and they are moving in a certain direction, and we do need to be aware of it.